Hey, Lulu here. Whether we are romping through science, music, politics, technology, or feelings, we seek to leave you seeing the world anew. Radiolab adventures right on the edge of what we think we know, wherever you get podcasts.
It's The Takeaway. I'm Tanzina Vega. Glad you're with us. In 1998, Cincinnati-based attorney Rob Bellott was contacted by a farmer from West Virginia named Wilbur Tennant. And Tennant said that his cows were being poisoned by chemicals left on a nearby property by the chemical giant DuPont. And while Tennant knew of Bellott through a family connection, the lawyer was something of an odd fit for the job.
He was a corporate defense attorney working at one of the biggest, most conservative law firms in the United States and the world, and they did a lot of work for chemical companies.
That's Mark Ruffalo, who stars as Rob Bellott in a new film called Dark Waters. And part of what drew Ruffalo to this story was the fact that Bellott eventually agreed to sue DuPont despite his corporate ties.
20 years later, he discovered the biggest criminal act on it by behalf of any corporation probably in the history of business, and a 50-year cover-up. And it was a story that none of us knew about.
Exposing that cover-up of the harmful effects of a chemical used to manufacture Teflon, known as PFOA, is at the center of Dark Waters. Here's Ruffalo in a scene from the film.
They want to show the world it's no use fighting. Look, everybody, even he can't crack the maze, and he's helped build it. The system is rigged. They want us to think it'll protect us, but that's a lie. We protect us. We do. Nobody else. Not the companies, not the scientists, not the government, us.
Ahead of Dark Waters release this Friday, I sat down with Mark Ruffalo and the movie's director, Todd Haynes, and we started off by discussing why Haynes agreed to tackle Bellott's story after Ruffalo brought him the script.
I really couldn't shake it. I couldn't really stop thinking about the story and the way it might be handled. And I've always loved these kinds of movies when they have that brooding sense of despair sort of lurking over what these individuals confront and how the process of those stories get revealed to an audience in a sort of very close attention to the process. And that was all in this film, as well as this is really interesting sort of network of people from different classes that have to join forces to come together to take on DuPont.
And this is a story, as Mark mentioned, and as we know from the actual reporting here, is that this played out roughly over two decades. And as a director, how do you approach a story that's so long and so can be so difficult and, as you know, unsatisfying in some instances, and bring it to the screen in a way that audiences will feel connected to it and will resonate?
Yeah, I think that was the biggest sort of dramatic and narrative challenge that I took very much to heart and brought writer Mario Correa on board. And Mario and I joined Mark in Cincinnati in May, June of 2018, and met all of the people firsthand and began talking to them and seeing their homes and their farms and where they live and driving with Rob from Cincinnati to Parkersburg. And, you know, you feel like, okay, this is going to have to be grounded in a human experience and how that human experience brings people together and then alienates them again. But yes, this is a story about a guy at a certain point of our narrative going through hundreds of thousands of pages of discovery and piecing together a backstory that had been completely withheld from public knowledge, them assuming no human being would be capable of doing so. And Rob Bellott was that human being. And so, yes, we had the challenge of watching a guy kind of get buried alive in boxes of discovery that finally he lands in his office at Taft and figuring out a way to kind of observe that process. You sort of pull back from Rob and feel like the walls closing in on him. And then finally, there's a point in the sort of the middle of the film where he's ready to present what he's found. And this is sort of the centerpiece where we finally present this unimaginable scope of persistent practices of concealing how they knew that the chemical we're talking about is PFOA, which is used for the production of Teflon. And they knew from the 1970s, how toxic it was in animals and then in workers and then in water systems. And they were just dumping it, hundreds of thousands of tons of sludge into the water systems of Ohio and into the air systems. And so this was completely within their knowledge, and they persisted in doing so.
This movie is coming out. I mean, as we speak, there are public impeachment hearings underway in Washington, D.C., and there will be for, at least from a news perspective, for the foreseeable future. Whistleblowers are very much a part of the national conversation. We've spoken to some of them here on this show about the risks that they take. Mark, do you see echoes of Rob Bilott's story in how the Ukraine whistleblower is being discussed or in anything that's happening that's playing out on the national political stage right now?
You know, it's very different in a lot of ways because he's not really a classic whistleblower. He's more in the investigative journalist, I think, category.
Which is a genre you like.
It's a genre I love and I really appreciate and I'm grateful for it. But, you know, there's the same play that goes on is to create obfuscation, doubt, try to smear the person or create a charm campaign to in some way impugn the information that they're trying to bring forward to the world. These are all plays that are not just in politics, and we're seeing it happening right in front of our eyes in this impeachment hearing, but also it happens in the corporate world, and it happens over and over again. You'll see an individual come forward with some truth of contamination or disease or addiction. And you'll see the machinery of the corporations kick into high gear to either create false, misleading science, to obfuscate and hide the truth, to change the rules, move the goalposts. And all of those things you see in this film. And the film is about PFOA, but it's also about a system that we're living under that brings us tobacco, that brings us ExxonMobil knowing about climate change for 30 years and hiding that. The fossil fuel industry telling us that fracking is harmless to water and to the air. The pharmaceuticals telling us that opioids, that oxycodone is less addictive than Advil. And we see it time and time again. And we hope that the film opens up a greater discussion about this systemic problem and this slavishness to corporate profit at the cost of the health and well-being of our citizens.
And, you know, to that point, you've spoken a lot about environmental issues, including fracking and at Standing Rock. We've talked about, on this show, we've had conversations about whether Hollywood and the arts more broadly are doing enough to bring these issues like climate change to light in through art. And so do you think they are doing enough?
You have to make a good product. You know, you can't just take a shot at it just because you should, right? I wanted to blend more of my environmental activism with storytelling. That was important to me, especially coming out of 2016. I did see the power of it. I know the power that a film can have on issues, whether it's gay marriage, people understanding what happened during the AIDS epidemic, the priest molestation, or here with PFOA. And so if you can do it and you can find a compelling story, you can influence the discussion or certainly create a space for a different kind of discussion with different knowledge. It's one thing to read something. It's another thing to watch a documentary or to hear a journalist talk about it. But to take a journey of people and tell stories about people's real experiences, a farmer, conservative people in a part of America that's mostly conservative, fighting against a corporate entity, that's relatable. And that helps us transcend the politics and feel with our hearts the actual experiential understanding of these problems. And I think that opens us up to a conversation, these hard conversations that we're going to have.
Is it too simple to call Rob's story one of empowerment, one of inspiration? Is there more to it than that? Do you see this as something in this moment that might inspire, as Spotlight and maybe All the President's Men did, might inspire people to be more aware or to speak out?
Oh, yeah. I mean, it is an incredibly inspiring movie. It doesn't mean it's not realistic, tethered by the realities of how perilous a kind of fight this can be and how much pushback you're going to face. In the end, because of Rob's efforts on DuPont, DuPont has splintered off into its manufacturing arm is now renamed Chemours, where it can kind of continue to produce Teflon-like products. They had to change the name. They had to switch from PFOA, the C8 with 8 carbons, to C6 as if it's something different. And they merged with Dow Chemical. So DuPont, as we know it, doesn't even exist. The Teflon brand has been forever tarnished by this experience. So in many ways, these are massive symbols of American industrial success and fame and profitability. He really did take those pinnacles of power down. And it takes a single individual and all the people around him to make that fight successful.
And I also want to add, you know, every screening that we've done, we've brought Rob with us to do the Q&As. And Ty gets applause. I get applause. When this man walks into the room, it's people jump to their feet in a standing ovation. And that is their understanding of a hero. And that's inspiring to them because today you turn on the television and what we're being told over and over again is we're all lousy people. The world's a lousy place. You might as well just get as much as you can, be as selfish as you can, and one day you'll be the president that way. And so people want stories and need stories about people who are selfless, who are doing good things for other people, even at their own cost, at the own cost of their wealth, at the own cost of their health. And that's just as meaningful and important a life to live. And that's why people jump to their feet when they see this man in real life. And that's why this story is ultimately so inspiring. They're inspired to jump to their feet for him. He's not a hero because we all want to be him. He's a hero because we don't, because we know how hard that is to do. But we also know what accolades come with that, how meaningful that is. That's a meaningful life. That's a well-lived life. And that's what people are responding to in the movie.
We can't talk about structural issues and institutional issues without talking about Hollywood's institutional and structural issues. You were nominated for an Oscar for Spotlight in 2016, but around that time, that was about the second year that I think the Oscars So White hashtag took off. Mm. Since then, we've seen the Me Too movement reignited, particularly with a focus on Hollywood and big names there. Are you satisfied with the progress that has been made so far, whether it's in terms of addressing sexual exploitation of women and men in the industry or the lack of racial diversity in the industry?
You know, we have a long way to go in my industry, but America has a long way to go as well. You know, when you think of the changes, and I already see them. I mean, I've done sex scenes for 20 years now. We've never had an intimacy coordinator on set before. Now, you don't do a sex scene without an intimacy coordinator, and that whatever happens in that scene is agreed upon by the actors. There's no way you could strong-arm an actor or an actress in this kind of structure now. And there's a sense of safety there, but also a consciousness. You can only, my acting teacher used to say, no man is greater than the time they live in. And so we're training. You know, we grew up in this. It's like asking a fish about water. Unless someone can show it to you and differentiate it to you, you're ignorant. And we're in this time now of training people. And like decades, generations, we're training people, okay? This is deeply entrenched in us. So when I see that I walk onto a set and that's a consideration, or there, we're all meeting before we shoot the movie, all of us, the whole crew, everybody, and it's explained to us what discrimination is, what sexual harassment is, all of these things that we have been sort of assuming our whole lives and have been taught cultural norms our whole lives, we're changing. That takes some time, you know, but I see the change. I see the behavior changing. And, you know, is it going to swing? It has to swing to extremes to, in order to correct itself. But I'm happy with what I'm seeing. And I think it's happening when you consider how long it's been going on. The changes that are taking place now are satisfying to me. I mean, it could be better, but I also see things happening. And I see the next generation is going to know definitively what's acceptable and what's not. And so I think we have to make room for the older folks, the people who have been living in it the longest, to learn it, you know, to stumble, to mess up, to still get it wrong. Keep our hearts open that people can come around and do the right thing and learn to change. But also keep pushing for an institutional, systematic change that is more fair to all of us.
Mark Ruffalo is the star of Dark Waters, and Todd Haynes is the film's director. Thanks so much to you both.
Thanks for having us, Tanzina.